Hello, this is Dr. Phil Fernandez, the founder of the Institute of Biblical Defense and the academic dean of Farriston Theological Seminary. Today's lecture is lecture number one in our series on world religions. World religions, lecture number one, and we'll be discussing an introduction to world religions. An introduction to world religions. Take a look at James, the New Testament book of James, chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. And James, the brother of our Lord, states this: If anyone thinks himself to be religious, and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. Now, I'm reading this quote because today is often said that I'm not religious, I'm a Christian, or I'm not religious, I just love Jesus. And what is meant by those statements is exactly right. However, we're not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. James in verse 26 talks about worthless religion. Worthless religion. Worthless religion would be a man who professes to be a believer, but his faith produces no good works in his life. In other words, he really doesn't believe. But then James talks about pure religion, undefiled religion, which is visiting orphans and widows. In other words, there is a worthless religion, and that would be classified as any attempt to worship God, whereas Jesus Christ said in John chapter 4, verse 24, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. If you try to worship God in truth without the Spirit, that's worthless religion, false religion. If you try to worship God in spirit but without truth, such as the Buddhist or the Hindus or any other religion other than Christianity, that is a worthless religion. But there is pure and undefiled religion, that is worshiping the God of the Bible and allowing him to produce good works in your life. And so we need to understand that when we say that we're not religious, we're not saying that all religion is bad. True Christianity, Christianity is the true and pure religion. True Christianity, that is. And so we need to understand there is such a thing as pure religion. So when we state, I'm not religious, I just love Jesus, or I'm not religious, I'm a Christian, or I believe in Christianity, not religion, what we're saying is, we're saying that the way the world uses the term religion and religious, that cannot describe us. We're not working to earn our salvation as those in other religions are. And so when we talk about religion in that sense, we're talking about false religions. But when we talk about religion in the sense of Christianity, then we're talking about true religion. And it can be used in a positive tone. So we need to be aware of that, that sometimes religion can be used in the good sense. As far as Christianity is the true religion, all other religions are false religions. Let's take a quick overview of our course. A quick overview of our course on world religions. Today I'm going to be discussing an introduction to world religions. An introduction to world religions. In this, I'm going to be trying to answer two questions. Question number one, what is religion? What is religion? We're going to define religion. And then question number two, where did religion come from? Where did religion come from, or the origin of religions? Lecture number two, we're going to spend an entire 45-minute lecture on basic Christian beliefs. Basic Christian beliefs. When I did my course on the cults, I did not have time to give a lecture like this. But here we have time, so I'm going to give a lecture on basic Christian beliefs. We're going to cover 9 basic Christian beliefs, give you the verses for it, So then when we attempt to refute the other world religions, we don't have to go to those verses, we can just refer to it. So I recommend that everybody, bank tellers, they don't give them counterfeit bills so that they'll recognize counterfeit bills. Instead, they let them handle thousands upon thousands of authentic dollar bills and $20 bills so that the more they know the truth, the less vulnerable they'll be to counterfeits. And so I recommend that lecture number 2 be a lecture that everyone goes over a couple times maybe. Study your notes on that. Get that down pat, because the more you know the truth, the less susceptible you will be to the lies of the false religions. Lecture number 3 will be discussing Judaism. Those Jews who have rejected Jesus Christ as their Messiah. Lecture number 4 will be discussing Islam, the faith of Muhammad and the Muslims, Islam. Lecture number 5 will discuss Hinduism. Lecture number 6, Buddhism. Then lectures number 7 and 8, secular humanism. Lectures number 9 and 10, the New Age movement. And then in lectures 11 and 12, we'll be discussing other religions. 11 and 12, other religions. Let me just read the names of those religions to you. Jainism, Confucianism, Taoism, Shintoism, Zoroastrianism, and Sikhism. Again, Jainism, Confucianism, Taoism, Shintoism, Zoroastrianism, and Sikhism. And so that's basically an overview of our course. This lecture, an introduction to world religions. Lecture number 2, basic Christian beliefs. Lecture number 3, Judaism. Lecture number 4, Islam. Lecture number 5, Hinduism. Lecture number 6, Buddhism. Lecture 7 and 8, secular humanism. Lectures 9 and 10, the New Age movement. And lectures 11 and 12, other world religions. And so let's start our first lecture, Introduction to World Religions. Introduction to World Religions. And remember, though we're going to be covering false religions, there is a pure and undefiled religion that James talks about in James chapter 1, verse 26. And the word he uses for religion is thraiskaia. And so he says that there is a good and pure religion. There is a true religion, and that's what true Christianity is, not perversions of Christianity like the non-Christian cults. True Christianity is the true and undefiled religion, the true faith that truly does produce good works in a person's life. The next lecture we're going to be looking at basic Christian beliefs, what that pure and undefiled religion is. But for the meantime, we're going to discuss what is a religion and the origin of religion. And so let's begin this lecture. Question number 1, what is religion? What is religion? First, we're going to discuss the view of Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell was a British atheist, or a British agnostic. Most atheists an atheist believes that God does not exist. An agnostic is a person who just claims it's impossible for man to know if God exists, and most atheists have recognized that they can't claim to be an atheist, so now they claim to be agnostics, because it's impossible to prove that God does not exist. It's possible to have experienced God, like the Christian claims to have done, but it's impossible to claim to have the evidence to totally refute the existence of God. Because a person would have to be all-knowing and be everywhere present in order to come up with that kind of information. But Bertrand Russell is a British agnostic, and he basically, in one of his works, which is actually a compilation of several of his works, titled Why I Am Not a Christian. Bertrand Russell is very, very anti-Christian, by the way, and you could tell that from the title of that work, Why I Am Not a Christian. He pretty much teaches that religion or a religious person, a religious person is anyone who is dogmatic about their views. A religious person is anyone who is dogmatic about their views. Now, by stating this, he was claiming and claiming to be and classifying himself as a free thinker. As a free thinker. Actually, he was, you know, an atheist. He claimed to be an agnostic, but it was really, he was an atheist. But he classified himself as a free thinker, somebody who's not dogmatic about things. He viewed a religious person as somebody who's dogmatic about their views, somebody who doesn't have the evidence for their beliefs, but believes them anyway, and if you disagree with them, they want to kill you just about. That's what a religious person is. And so he said, we need to be free thinkers. We need to be free thinkers. Now, it just so happened that what he did was, even though atheistic communists, like the Soviet Union, even though atheistic communists agree with him on most of his views, Bertrand Russell classified them as religious and said that he was not religious. You see, he was saying those atheistic communists, they're dogmatic about their atheism. They're dogmatic about their views of government. And so he blamed all the murders that the atheist communists believed that committed, he blamed all those murders on religious people. And then he looked at all the murders that the papacy, the old Roman Catholic Church, committed in the Crusades and the Inquisition. And he said, look at all the people that those religious people have killed. And then he looked at the atheistic communists who have more in common with him than they do with Christians. And he said, see, those religious people are at it again. And Bertrand Russell, although he would say, look at all the people that communism has killed, he also coined the phrase, better red than dead. And so he was saying, hey, why fight the communists? Let them take us over. It'd be better to be a communist than to be dead. But see, Bertrand Russell said, anyone who is dogmatic about their views is religious. Now let me state this about Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell once stated this. He said, we need to recognize that being dogmatic about something, in other words, feeling that you were certain about certain truths, that you knew certain truths, and that you were certain about these truths, be dogmatic is wrong. But he stated that to be a skeptic, that's someone who suspends judgment on all things, somebody who says, well, we really don't know anything. He says, but to be a skeptic is to be dogmatic about your skepticism. And so he says, you can't be dogmatic, but you can't be a skeptic. What we need is to play the middle of the road, in between. Now, what's the problem with that view? The problem with that view is Bertrand Russell is dogmatic about playing the middle of the road. The one who says that we shouldn't be dogmatic, we should be skeptical, he's dogmatically skeptical. But the one who says we should be neither, we should play the middle of the road, he's dogmatically a middle of the roader. In other words, the guy who says, well, I don't believe that each person should have beliefs, well, that's his own dogmatic belief. And so what it amounts to is there's no escape from dogmatism. The skeptic can't escape from being dogmatic about his skepticism. The middle of the roader can't escape the fact that he's dogmatic about being the middle of the road. The free thinker can't escape from being dogmatic about being what he calls a free thinker. And so Bertrand Russell says that a religious person is anyone who's dogmatic about their views. I'd agree with that. But I go one step further and say that even Bertrand Russell was dogmatic about his views. Look at all the times he protested against war. He protested against World War I. Look at all the times he protested against... it was World War II that he protested against. And then he protested... for gay rights, equal rights for gays. All the stances that he took, he was very dogmatic about his views. But Bertrand Russell said that religion is anyone who's dogmatic about their views, but he classified himself as a free thinker. Now Karl Marx, who wrote the Communist Manifesto, he taught this. This is a quote of his from his writings. Religion is the opium of the people. Let me repeat that. Karl Marx stated, religion is the opium of the people. What did he mean by that? He meant that religion is the drug, the narcotic, that keeps people so doped up that it allows the workers to be enslaved by the capitalist. Religion is the narcotic or the drug that keeps people so doped up that it allows these people, these workers, to be enslaved by the capitalist or by their bosses, those who own the means of production. See, Karl Marx saw everything in terms of economy, dollars and cents. And Karl Marx said, religion is the opium of the people. Religion is the narcotic that allows workers to be enslaved by capitalists. In other words, let's say your boss is a real slave driver and he intimidates you and you work for horrible wages, you have no share in the profits. Just a ruthless, ruthless boss, and things are really looking bad for you. You could always say, well, I know that someday I'm going to die and go to heaven and I'll have an eternity of, you know, share eternal life with Jesus Christ in heaven. So things aren't that bad. I'll allow my boss to beat the tar out of me and treat me like garbage. See, that's what Karl Marx said. Karl Marx said, religion is just a narcotic, the drug that just allows workers to be enslaved and abused by their bosses. Marx also believed that religion is the cause of the divisiveness and war. It's the cause of divisiveness and war. You find this in that John Lennon song where he sings, it's becoming more and more popular, imagine there's no heaven, imagine there's no hell below us. And he sings about how the world can come together as one. It's the idea that every time there's a war, it's because of somebody's dogmatic religious views. And if we just weren't religious, if we weren't religious, we could all hold hands and live together in peace. And so Karl Marx is thinking atheism, he was an atheist, atheism was not viewed as a religion. Atheism was not viewed as a religion. So in Karl Marx's view, religion is for the doped up people. Religion just dopes up people. But the intelligent people are atheists. Now in Bertrand Russell's view, some atheists were religious. The bad atheists are religious, the good atheists are not religious. That type of thing. So just some little distinctions in there. But I believe the view that's correct is not Bertrand Russell's view or Karl Marx's view, but Paul Tillich's view. Paul Tillich's view. Paul Tillich by no means was a conservative Christian. But his view is that, number one, all persons have an ultimate commitment. All persons have an ultimate commitment. In other words, all persons have something that they ultimately commit themselves to. Something that drives them in life. All persons have an ultimate commitment. Paul Tillich said that therefore all persons are religious, even atheists. Paul Tillich said all persons have an ultimate commitment. All persons are therefore religious, even atheists. Now, Webster's Dictionary gives several definitions of religion, but one of the definitions they give would include all people. Though Webster says, you know, belief in God and the supernatural is one of the definitions they give, Webster also gives this definition. Let me read it. Webster's Dictionary definition of religion: a cause, principle, or system of beliefs. A cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. Let me repeat that. A cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. In other words, any person that has a system of beliefs or principles or a cause that they hold to with their whole being, that they energetically hold to it, that they trust, these beliefs that they trust, they are a religious person. And even the atheist who claims not to be religious is very evangelistic in his atheism. He spreads that atheism. He tries to convert people to atheism. Even the person who believes that you should never share your religious views with other people, he shares his religious views with other people when he tells you that you shouldn't share your religious views with other people. And he's trying to convert you to his views, because if he wasn't, he wouldn't have corrected you and told you not to share your religious views with other people. But all people have certain beliefs, certain views about reality, certain beliefs that they hold to, which is going to affect their behavior. And therefore, all persons are religious. The Supreme Court agrees with Paul Tillich on this. In the 1961 Turcaso versus Watkins Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court defined secular humanism as a religion. Let me repeat that. In the 1961 Turcaso versus Watkins Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court clearly defined secular humanism as a religion. Now, what does secular humanism believe? Secular humanism holds to the beliefs of the first and second humanist manifestos. The humanist manifesto, the first one was written in 1933, the second one was written in 1973. In the first humanist manifesto, it's on page 8 of Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2. The first humanist manifesto, it reads as follows. It says, We therefore affirm the following. In other words, we believe the following. First, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. First, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as the result of a continuous process. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as the result of a continuous process. So the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, written by the secular humanists themselves, teaches that they believe in atheistic evolution. In other words, evolution without God. They believe there is no God and that man got here through evolution. Now the Supreme Court in 1961, the Turcaso versus Watkins Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court defined secular humanism, an atheistic evolutionary belief system, they defined it as a religion. And so they would agree with Paul Tillich that all persons have an ultimate commitment, all persons are religious, even atheists. It doesn't mean all persons have the true religion, but it means that when an atheist makes fun of a Christian and says, "You religious people get on my nerves," he doesn't realize he's an extremely religious person himself. Now, going back to the Humanist Manifestos number 1 and 2, particularly Humanist Manifesto number 1, actually the preface to it written by Paul Kurtz, I believe he's the chairman of the philosophy department at NYU, if I remember correctly. Paul Kurtz, in the preface, his first sentence on page 3 reads as follows. Humanism is a philosophical, religious, and moral point of view as old as human civilization itself. Let me repeat that. Humanism is a philosophical, religious, and moral point of view as old as human civilization itself. Paul Kurtz admits that secular humanism is religious. Even though they don't believe that God exists, even though they believe in atheistic evolution, they still recognize that their views are religious views. Page 8 of Humanist Manifesto number 1. Page 8 of Humanist Manifesto number 1, it reads as follows. To establish such a religion, talking about the religion of secular humanism, To establish such a religion is a major necessity of the present. It is a responsibility which rests upon this generation. We therefore affirm the following. First, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as the result of a continuous process. Now, two things I want to key on. They refer to what they're talking about as such a religion, and then in the first thing they say religious humanist. So very clearly they agree with Paul Tillich that even atheists are religious people. Look at page 9. Well, if you have it, the Humanist Manifesto number 1, page 9. The seventh affirmation that they make reads as follows. Religion consists of those actions, purposes, and experiences which are humanly significant. Here's the key statement. Nothing human is alien to the religious. Let me repeat that. The secular humanists, these atheistic evolutionists, the secular humanists state that nothing human is alien to the religious. In other words, human beings, you cannot separate, take the religion out of the man, because then he would no longer be a man. And so when the atheistic evolutionist comes down on you like a ton of bricks, you can say, hey, there were many of the intellectual leaders of atheistic evolutionists who openly admit that they're very religious. They even state this in the seventh affirmation, the distinction between the sacred, that's the religious realm, and the secular, that's the non-religious realm, can no longer be maintained. Let me repeat that. The distinction between the sacred and the secular can no longer be maintained. In other words, what they're saying is, you can't really separate, you can't really take religion fully out of the schools. So these men did not say, let's take religion out of the schools. They just said, let's replace the Christian and Jewish religion with the atheistic evolutionary religion. But you can't separate the religious and the non-religious anymore. The sacred and the secular, you can't separate the two. So Webster's Dictionary says, what Paul Tillich says, Webster's Dictionary says that all people can be religious since they all have a system of beliefs by which they live and which they hold to and which they're committed to and which they trust in by faith. The Supreme Court defines secular humanism as a religion. The Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 defines atheistic evolution as a religion. Then there's Jean-Paul Sartre. This is still under Paul Tillich. His definition, Jean-Paul Sartre was an atheistic existentialist. He was an atheistic existentialist, and Jean-Paul Sartre believed that there was no meaning to life, there's no God, therefore there's no meaning to life, so man has to take a leap of blind faith into the irrational realm to create meaning for his life because he so desperately needs meaning. Now, at one time, Sartre actually said this. He said, to be human means to strive to be God. To be human means to strive to be God. In other words, even atheists, whether you're Jean-Paul Sartre or whether you're Carl Sagan, statement after statement that these men make shows a heavy religious overtone. All men are religious. Now Schleiermacher, who was a man who studied religions throughout his lives, he defined religion as a feeling of cosmic dependence, a feeling that we're dependent on something else for our existence, something which transcends us, something which is out of our grasp. And Schleiermacher stated that religion is a universal experience. Religion is a universal experience. In other words, all men are religious. All mankind is religious. Christian philosophers, Norman Geisler and Francis Schaeffer, both agree that all mankind is religious. Dr. Norman Geisler and Dr. Francis Schaeffer both agree that all mankind is religious. So I would hold to Paul Tillich's view that all persons have an ultimate commitment. All persons are religious. All mankind is religious. You see, the statement, there is a God, is a religious statement. The statement, there is a God, is a religious statement. No doubt about it. However, what our atheistic evolutionary friends need to understand is that the statement, there is no God, is also a religious statement. The statement, there is no God, is also a religious statement. And so these people say, we want religion out of the public schools, therefore we have to teach atheistic evolution. They're actually teaching secular humanism as the religion in the schools. And so you eat in the creation versus evolution debate, as far as the public schools go, both sides should be taught. There's good evidence. Actually, I think the evidence far out on the creation side far outweighs any supposed evidence on the evolutionary side. But present both sides of the issue. If you do not, you're teaching a state religion. You're forcing religion on the students. If you teach only creation, you're forcing the Judeo-Christian heritage on the students. But if you're teaching only atheistic evolution, you're forcing upon the students the religion of secular humanism. So I would agree with Paul Tillich that all persons are religious. Whether you're atheist or whether you believe that some kind of God exists, all persons are religious. Let's just give a brief definition of religion. A brief definition of religion. Religion is the set of beliefs that a person has. Religion is the set of beliefs that a person has that deal with God, whether he exists or not, whether you think he exists or not. Remember, to say there is a God is a religious statement, but to say there is no God is also a religious statement. Religion is the set of beliefs that a person has that deal with God, reality, the meaning of life, behavior, and values. Let me repeat that. Religion is the set of beliefs a person has that deal with God, reality, the meaning of life, behavior, or values. You see, religion is man attempting to transcend this realm. Man attempting to reach what seems to be out of his grasp. Man attempting to move beyond this realm. Religion contains man's views about God. For the religious Christian, he believes in God. For the religious atheist, he believes there is no God. But religion is man's views about God, salvation, and moral values. Man's views about God, salvation, and moral values that will also influence man's view about man, man's view about sin, and man's view about meaning to life. So that's why we often say, well, I'm not religious, I'm a Christian, because religion is man's views about God, but Christianity is God's view. Christianity is God's revelation to man of the true religion. God's revelation of the true religion to man. That's what Christianity is. And so a Christian man can have the true religion in that he trusts in God, the God of the Bible, for his information. And so we define religion as the set of beliefs a person has that deal with God, reality, meaning, behavior, or values. And we said that religion is man attempting to transcend this realm, and that we stated that all persons are religious. All mankind is religious. Religion is a universal experience. Now let's discuss, in the brief time that we have left, the origin of religion. The origin of religion. Sigmund Freud said something that was real interesting about his views about the origin of religion. People like to talk a little bit about what he stated, but they don't go into depth to see how weird and off the wall his views were. But pages 40 and 41 of Ninian Smart's work, The Religious Experience of Mankind, is very interesting. I'm going to read that. Pages 40 and 41, Ninian Smart's The Religious Experience of Mankind. It is appropriate here to mention a very widely known theory about the totemic origins of religion. It is that of Sigmund Freud and was expressed principally in his Totem and Taboo, published in 1912 to 1913. The English translation appeared in 1918. Freud attempted to combine a psychoanalytical approach to religion with a current theory of totemism. According to this theory, the sacrifice of an animal, which is a very widespread phenomenon and occurs in all sorts of cultures, originates from a totemic feast in which the solidarity of the clan with its totem animal is affirmed and expressed. Since also there is associated with totemism a typical social arrangement, namely that of exogamy, Freud wished to give a psychological explanation of the relation between sacrifice and marriage outside of the clan. To do so, he adopted a speculative account of the earliest form of human society. This is important. He proposed that originally humans banded together in small hordes consisting of a male, a number of females who were his wives, and the offspring of this polygamous arrangement. According to Freud's psychoanalytical theory, a male child early in life had sexual desires towards his mother and consequently has ambivalent feelings about his father. Though the father is protective so that the child is to this extent loves him, the child is also jealous of his father because of his relationship to the mother. This hatred of the father gave Freud the idea that the first group of human offspring banded together to kill the father. After the murder, they ate him in a ritual meal, thereby taking into themselves the substance of the father's hated power. Yet the guilt occasioned by this act induced them to forbid to themselves the possible fruits of the father's removal. A ban was put upon incest and upon marriage within the clan, and a symbolic animal sacrifice was substituted for the ritual killing of a human being. The animal sacrifice was, however, normally taboo to members of the clan. Hence the social arrangements of totemism. Furthermore, God as a father figure is regarded by Freud as a projection of the human's imagination, and represents the physical human father who is both respected and rejected. Needless to say, Freud's theory is extremely speculative. There is no evidence of the primeval murder he postulates. It is not confirmed, and could never be confirmed, that men in the earliest times banded together in polygamous groups. Totemism is not a universal phenomenon among primitive peoples. Sacrifices are not plausibly interpreted as totemic, and the offerings of first fruits do not involve a sacral communion. In brief, as a theory of the genesis of religion, Freud's account is hardly credible. Now, there's a lot of terms there that I'm not going to take time to define. All I want to state is that Freud's view that a boy wants to have sex with his... It's normal for a boy to want to have sex with his mother, and therefore he hates his father. But since his father loves him, his father protects him, he also loves his father in a weird way, but that we somehow bear the guilt of prehistoric man who banded together and killed his father, and so that God is a projection of our imagination, a father that we love, but a father that we fear at the same time, it's just total speculation. It's basic hogwash. Now, Ludwig Feuerbach, he taught that religion is the dream of the human mind. Pretty much along the same lines. He didn't get as deep as Freud did. Ludwig Feuerbach taught that religion is the dream of the human mind, or religion is, in other words, God didn't create man, but man created God by his own imagination. Now, R.C. Sproul wrote an excellent book, If There's a God, Why Are There Atheists? And on page 49 of R.C. Sproul's book, he refutes Freud, Feuerbach, Friedrich Nietzsche, and Karl Marx, and he states this: in fact, all the arguments presented above have no bearing on the existence, on the issue of the existence of God. Freud, Marx, and the others were not attempting to disprove the existence of God. Their arguments already presuppose the non-existence of God. They were not dealing with the question, is there a God? They were dealing with the question, since there is no God, why is there religion? In other words, these weren't arguments to disprove God's existence. These men already believed that that was already proven, and they try to explain, well, if God doesn't exist, why do 95% of the people in the world believe that he does? And so they began to speculate apart from the evidence and came up with weird views. Now, I'd like to close with this. The evolutionary theory of the origin of religions is this: that religion started as polytheism, the worship of many gods, and then it evolved into monotheism. It got more mature. That's the worship of one God. And then eventually you end up with atheism. There is no God. That's the most mature religion. So the evolutionary theory is started with polytheism, went to monotheism, and then to atheism. And they state this because the most primitive tribes are mostly polytheistic. They worship many gods. But now we've started to learn from these polytheistic tribes that they say, well, we believe that there's a creator God who created even the lesser gods that we worship, but we don't know his name, we forgot how to worship him, and so instead we try to appease the lesser gods because we're afraid of them. So what they're stating is that their polytheism traces back to a former monotheism. In other words, the evidence appears to point to the biblical doctrine of the origin of religion. What was man's first attempt to worship the God of the Bible? It was after the fall. It was Cain and Abel. And Abel properly worshiped God. In other words, the first form of religion was monotheism and animal sacrifice. The belief in one God and animal sacrifice to appease him. And then that evolved into polytheism and atheism. In other words, the true and pure origin of religion is the worship of one God, an animal sacrifice to appease him, which of course pointed to the future when one day God would send the Lamb of God to be sacrificed for the sins of mankind. We defined religion and we talked about the origin of religion, that the most primitive religion on earth is the worship of one God, an animal sacrifice to appease him. And then we stated that the animal sacrifices pointed forward to the day when God would become a man and die on the cross for our sins as the sacrificed Lamb of God who would take away the sins of the world. That's our introduction to world religions. Thank you, and God bless you.